Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you from the road as we get ready for the Citadel and Duke tonight coming up. 9 o'clock tip. So it's a late one this evening. I think it's on the ACC Network. But more importantly, I mean, if you're going to watch it, might as well mute it. And listen on the Citadel Radio Network locally in Charleston, on the city, our sister station, 102.1 FM, and then anywhere in the world. Online through our free app, TuneIn Radio, you can stream it. Head on over to thecitycharleston.com. Coverage begins at 8:30 tonight. Looking forward to it from Cameron Indoor. Got to be honest, I've never been. Right? It's like a bucket list item to be in that building tonight. Coach Baucom has never been either, at least not coaching head coach of the Citadel. He's been there, he said, been there once for a clinic or a camp type of deal, but has never coached in there before. Bulldogs came up early yesterday so they could get in there, get some shots around yesterday. They'll be back in there. In fact, right now. They're there right now at Cameron Indoor. I should have taken the machines we have, the technology nowadays, I could have taken the Comrex with me. I've been traveling while doing the show over to Cameron Indoor. I'd be walking around live on air. We could have done that. We could have done like a audio tour of Cameron Indoor while the team is over there at shoot-around right now. But point being, right there, you went over there yesterday, over there today. Want to make sure they get all of the goosebumps, all of the nerves out, the big thrill of playing in Cameron Indoor by the time we tip it off at 9 o'clock tonight. These games are always, and I can't wait for it, but it's like when the football team plays a night game on the road, and you just wait around all day. You sit around in the hotel just waiting to go, and it's like, still not, you know, we're not leaving until after 7 o'clock. You're waiting around. You have your dinner and everything. Monday Night Football's coming on. You're thinking, well, you haven't even tipped off yet. But I can't wait for the game tonight, the Citadel against Duke. I haven't seen a number. I was talking with some people over the weekend while we were in Chattanooga for the football game. Looked it up. Didn't see a number at the time. I'm sure there's one out there somewhere. I don't know what Duke's favored by tonight, but I'm looking forward to it. Actually, I just see it right here for the first time. Duke's favored by 26.5 tonight. Looking forward to that game. Speaking of college sports radio broadcast. Every Monday in the show, we always bring you some of the best sound from the football weekend because, for one, I, of course, am a play-by-play broadcaster, but I always think college football provides some of the best calls and enthusiasm that you get from these sports. Plus, it helps tell a story. Earlier, I gave you my winners and losers, and I thought the biggest loser of the weekend was Oregon, and therefore kind of the Pac-12 as well. Because we've already crossed off the ACC when it comes to the playoff this year. Now we can cross off the Pac-12. And for Oregon, it was really an embarrassing loss to Utah. And they got beat at their own game. But as I said earlier, what I really liked was Kyle Whittingham's aggressiveness. He was using his timeouts to force Oregon to punt with 10 seconds left in the first half. Most coaches probably think, we're up 21-0. There's only 10 seconds. We're not going to do anything. You know, what's the point? But you can either try to go for a block, you can try to go for a return. I loved Utah's aggression in using their timeouts to force that punt because otherwise, right, that's a form of playing not to lose. The coaches that think, 21-0, that's good enough, let's go to halftime. I love when coaches are aggressive. Utah forced the punt, they're already up 21-0. Here's how it sounded on Utah radio, the punt return at the end of the first half.
Here they go, they don't get it, but it's a bad punt off the side of the foot. Covey's going to take it. At about the 22-yard line, here he goes to the outside, Britton Covey. He's got the 30, he's got the 35, he's got the 40, up the sideline, 50, 45, 40, there he goes, 20, 10-5, touchdown, Britton Covey, 78 yards.
Great call on Utah radio. And that was the real dagger, right? If you're Oregon, you're thinking, all right, we're down 21-0. Let's regroup at half. They return that punt 28-0. They have the momentum, and Utah went on to beat Oregon by 30 points Saturday, essentially ending their season or dashing any sort of playoff hopes that they or even the conference had. Elsewhere, on my list of losers from earlier, I said the Florida decision makers. You could obviously say Dan Mullen. He lost his job. But I think, and circle back with me in a couple of years on this, I think Florida will regret this move. This year has been an utter disaster for Florida. There's no way around it. But when you look out there, we say this all the time when we talk about firing coaches. The idea is, well, you know, is there somebody better you're going to get? Are you firing someone just to fire them? Right? Are you getting rid of somebody just to make a move? Or are you getting rid of somebody because you think there's a better option out there? Usually when you fire a coach, it's just simply to make a move. Sometimes it's because you already have had communication, you know somebody's interested, you believe you're getting a better candidate. Sometimes that candidate's in the building, right? Like, for example, Georgia, when they fired Mark Richt to go get Kirby Smart. That was an example of, and Kirby's wife went on local radio last week, told the story. We may play that audio later on, but about how he was meeting that morning with people from the South Carolina Athletic Department when they got word that Richt was fired, and that changed everything for them. But they were about 24 hours away from taking the job. And Georgia realizes, well, hold on, wait a minute. Right, we want that guy to be our head coach, so we're going to make a move. In cases like that, you're making a move for a reason. But most of the time, you fire a head coach simply just to fire him, to make a change for the sake of making a change. And that's the case here. Now, who are you going to get next that's going to be a better coach? We'll find out. But remember, Dan Mullen just had this program in the SEC title game. Before Dan Mullen, you're going back to Will Muschamp and Jim McElwain. You're going back to Florida losing to Georgia Southern. Now, I know Florida's had some bad losses this year. They've lost three games in the conference in which they were pretty heavy favorites, including Saturday against Missouri. Three games they've lost outright when they were favored by over a touchdown. Can't happen. This year has been an embarrassment. It's been a disaster for Florida. It's terrible. But I think Mullen has built up enough, you know, cachet here to give him at least one offseason to try to turn it around. Florida has disagreed. They made the move firing Dan Mullen yesterday. And here was the play. This will go down in the history as the play that ended it for Mullen. In overtime, Missouri trailing 23-22. They score what looked to be a tying touchdown and felt, no, we're going to go for two and the win here at home. And here's how it sounded on Missouri radio.
Beatty lines up. Lone setback. Two tight ends, wings to each side. Bazelak under center. Rolling to his right, being flushed in the pocket, throws underneath, open. Missouri wins on Daniel Parker reception from Connor Bazelak. With two floor defenders in his grill, Missouri is bowl eligible in overtime. 24-23 on the Central Bank Tiger Network from Learfield.
It was a great play from Bazelak. He's falling backwards, defender in his face, lobs it to the left side, finds the open man for the two-point conversion. And as you heard in that call for Missouri, a big win because they go to a bowl, and also a big win because, really, it got Dan Mullen fired. And did you see Eli Drinkowitz afterwards? Now, I thought this was unnecessary trolling because also you know that Mullen's on his way out as well, so it's kind of like kicking a man while he's down. And I've always felt like coaches were in a fraternity or supposed to be in a fraternity. Last year when Florida beat Missouri, it was on Halloween, there was that fight on the field. Dan Mullen showed up to the post-game press conference dressed up as Darth Vader with a lightsaber. I don't think that had anything to do with Missouri. I'd have to go back and listen to anything he said, but I thought that was just because it was Halloween. I didn't think that was trolling Missouri at the time. So when Missouri won on Saturday, Drinkowitz showed up to the post-game press conference, and when he finished, he put his hood up and pulled out a lightsaber and said, "May the Force be with you," as he was grinning and walking off, obviously referring back to last year with Dan Mullen. And I just thought it was kind of kicking a man when he's down. You know he's probably going to lose his job. Coaches, I thought, they're a fraternity. You know, you don't want to root for one another to lose their job because you're in that same situation. Anyways, it's a good win for Missouri nonetheless. Dan Mullen out at Florida. I'll have more thoughts on this coming up. Also on my list of winners today, and we've been talking about it throughout the afternoon, has been the Gamecocks. South Carolina with a big win on Saturday to go to a bowl game. Now, this was such a big game, South Carolina against Auburn, that it was actually at least one of the games on Russian TV. I don't know how many games they broadcast on TV in Russia when it comes to college football, but this was one of them. So, unfortunately for Gamecock fans, the only clip I have from the Russian broadcast is a negative one for South Carolina, but here's how Jason Brown's interception in the first quarter sound in Russia.
Охвата тоже сделал человек с шикарным сочетанием имени и фамилии для игры в американский футбол.
Smoke Monday.
Да, Smoke Monday — это, конечно, хорошо. А вот такой вот замечательный перехват, и еле-еле здесь захватывают.
I need a little more out of them. If that was TV, so you can see what's happening. If that was the radio, and granted, I don't speak the language, that would sound like it was a one-yard run or something. I don't know what's going on there. That was an interception at the goal line and a pretty good return out across the 30 for Auburn. And you couldn't hear it there in the voice. So I don't know what they're saying. I need a little more out of them. But that's how you know you made it big time. I've been telling you, South Carolina, big win on Saturday. You're going bowling. And in Russia, they acknowledge how big of a game it was because they chose that, South Carolina and Auburn, to be at least one of the games they broadcast. I don't know how many they actually carry over there on a particular Saturday. More locally, on the Gamecocks Radio Network, here's how the second South Carolina touchdown sounded on that Jason Brown touchdown pass in the final 30 seconds of the second quarter to tie up the game and really swing things for South Carolina.
It's a 305-pound converted guard in at fullback. Brown under center, fakes the toss sweep, rolling right side in the flat. It's Trey Jones! An offensive guard at fullback just caught a 3-yard touchdown pass from Jason Brown, and this place erupts. Touchdown, Carolina. I never thought I'd say it. Touchdown, Trey Jones.
That was on the Gamecocks Radio Network on Saturday, which you can hear here. I thought South Carolina, Satterfield has taken a lot of heat this year as play caller of South Carolina. I think he's done a better job here these last couple of games, but I thought he did a really good job Saturday with some creativity. Whereas for Mike Bobo, former offensive coordinator of the Gamecocks, now with Auburn, I thought he tried to outthink the room in a lot of cases. I mean, what was that one play? Fourth and inches, and they're throwing it when you have a 6'7 quarterback to sneak it with, or a guy named Tank Bigsby in the backfield. There were some plays Saturday that I left, you know, I was kind of scratching my head with Mike Bobo. I thought he tried to be a little too cute, tried to be the smartest guy in the room a couple of times. I thought Satterfield, the new offensive coordinator, at least for Saturday, did a better job than the old offensive coordinator, Mike Bobo, now with Auburn. Also on my list of winners earlier, UTSA, trying to put the finishing touches on a perfect regular season. They were trailing 31-27 against UAB. 7 seconds left, third and goal. They had no timeouts left, and this play finished off the undefeated regular season for UTSA, puts them in their first conference championship game. Here's how it sounded on UTSA radio Saturday.
Third down and goal from the 1, 7 seconds to play in the game. Harris takes the snap. It's low. He picks it up. He's going to throw a pass into the end zone. Caught! Gardner catches it. Oscar Gardner with the catch. Touchdown, UTSA. Time is out. UTSA wins.
I thought maybe there's a little more to that at the end. But that's the call there for UTSA as they get the dramatic touchdown to win the game. And what a play it was if you didn't see it. I mean, they said it on the broadcast, but it's a drop snap. And the quarterback has to pick it up off the ground. He's scrambling to his left. He doesn't have a grip of the football. He just flips it forward, and he finds an open receiver who makes the catch on the final play to win and finish or continue undefeated and go to the conference championship. Quite the year for UTSA. No, you're not going to consider them for a playoff spot or anything like that, but a great year for them in the Conference USA. Arkansas gave Alabama all they could handle on Saturday. And for Alabama, we'll see if they continue to be ranked number two. I think at this point, you kind of have to put Ohio State ahead of them with how well Ohio State's been playing lately, and Alabama's had some close calls. But here was a great play from Arkansas on the fake field goal that leads to a touchdown pass for Arkansas Saturday as they almost came out with the win against Alabama.
21 this year. This is within his range. His long is 51. Bauer gets the snap. They're running a fake. Bauer jump pass. Complete. Blake Kern inside the 10 to the 5. Touchdown, Arkansas! How about that? How about Reed Bauer, 32 yards on the jump pass. Kern with the score. It's 34-27.
Well, that's a nice call by Scott Fountain, the special teams coordinator. I mean, Reed Bauer has been a special teams dynamite, and you know anytime you bring Cam Little out on the field, you've got a chance to make the field goal. But nice job, nice call. Blake Kern did a nice job just adjusting to the football and getting to the end zone.
You know, Kern's made a couple of really good catches today, one in the flat that was not well thrown and kind of tipped to himself. And, boy, he adjusted to the ball right there. How about, the courage to make that call.
By the way, that touchdown made it a one-score game in the fourth quarter for Arkansas. It was a big-time play. They didn't quite finish off the comeback, lost by a touchdown to Alabama. But you have seen plenty of vulnerabilities from Alabama. I think it's just a case of maybe they're not as good as they usually are. You watch them 1 week, maybe it's the defense, the offense, right? The offense played really well. Over the course of the year, it's been more about the defense. It hasn't been as good as anticipated. But for Alabama, and Nick Saban, by the way, if you listen to his press conferences, he's made a lot of comments in the past few weeks or throughout this season kind of warning you that this is not one of his better teams. We'll see how they match up with Georgia. Over the weekend, some odds makers said if they played on a neutral field today, even after what we saw, Georgia would be about a three-and-a-half-point favorite. I think it'd have to be even a little bit bigger. The only thing I come back to in that matchup is just simply, do you trust Kirby Smart to beat Nick Saban? That's it. Otherwise, what we've seen on the field this year, Georgia has looked like the far better team. Alabama has snuck out with some close victories, including that one at home against Arkansas. And Arkansas is a solid team, 7-4. They're a top 25 team, but I don't think many anticipated it would come down to the end like that, and Arkansas would score that many points on Alabama in their building. This is not quite the same Alabama type of team as years past for Saban. Still really good, but it'll come down to that matchup in the SEC title game against Georgia about how good they can be this year. And lastly, I bring you this. Harvard against Yale, which is always, of course, a big-time rivalry. This was from the Yale Bowl over the weekend. Harvard 7-2, Yale 5-4 this year. Yale is leading 31-27, 26 seconds to go. Harvard has a 3rd and 10 at the Yale 12 going for the win. Here's how it sounded on Harvard radio.
The timeout taken on either side. Both teams have burned all of their timeouts. From the 12-yard line, call it. 3rd down from the 12. MG's back to pass. He's looking end zone. He's got him in. And it is complete for the touchdown. Wimbley in the left corner of the end zone. And the Crimson have taken the lead 33-31 with 22 seconds remaining.
Now, growing up in Connecticut, most people don't care about Ivy League football, Hartford, Yale. But I can tell you, growing up in the state, that was always a big-time game. And a buddy of mine, him and his family, would go to that game every year, and they would say it was one of the wildest environments they've ever seen. The fans always rush the field afterwards. They tear down the goalposts. They used to have to get cops to guard the goalposts. My buddy used to tell stories when he was young, when he was a kid, right? They would go help push it down. There's been crazy stories. You can Google them about the things the Yale fans have done, the students at these games. People have been arrested. It is a wild rivalry game, Yale against Harvard. And you usually don't think of Yale and Harvard or Ivy League when you think football. I've actually never been. I know plenty of people who have, and they always say it is one of the most craziest games you'll go to. Big-time rivalry, a lot of fun at the Yale Bowl in New Haven, Connecticut. And Harvard got a dramatic touchdown there in the final 30 seconds to win. And I love that at least early on you could hear that Boston accent in that broadcaster. Right? A lot of times the broadcasters, you listen to a broadcast, they have to, you know, you usually don't get broadcasters with accents. You have to be able to appeal to everyone, not sound like you're from a certain region, even if you're working for a team. Like, even if you listen to any of the SEC teams, the guys usually don't have some sort of southern draw. But in this case, it at least came out, not in the play-by-play, but when he was talking on the lead-up to the play, you could hear that Boston accent creep out, make it really feel like a Harvard broadcast for Harvard and Yale. And a dramatic win there. There you go. There's our sound check. We always bring you some of the sounds from the football weekend on a Monday and recap what happened in the football world. When we come back, some thoughts on Dan Mullen, on Mel Tucker's contract extension with Michigan State, and the lack of patience that we have, not only in sports, but really as a society in general, and we're probably never turning back. We'll get to all that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa.
cat, pussy cat. I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and powder your cute little pussy cat nose. Pussy cat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussy cat nose.
Coming up.
We have lost all patience, and I don't think we're ever going to get it back. It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I do love this song from Tom Jones. There's a stand-up bit. It's John Mulaney, I think. He does a story about putting this song on repeat on the jukebox in some diner, playing it like 40 times in a row and driving everybody crazy. It's a whole thing. But that's a great song from Tom Jones from back in the day. The coaching carousel, this is set up in college football to be one of the crazier coaching carousels here this year. I mean, you look at the jobs that are open, LSU, USC, Florida, rumors or speculation that Miami could become available. And then as the dominoes start to fall, who knows what happens, right? If, say, James Franklin goes out to USC. Well, now you have Penn State open. So there's another big job opening this offseason. Rumors about Lane Kiffin going to Miami if that job becomes available. Well, now you got an Ole Miss job available. You know, it's just, especially right now, the way that program's playing, that's a big-time opening. So we'll see how things start to turn here in this carousel, but already some big jobs have opened up. Now, we know, just in general, and like most things, you love to blame the younger cultures or the younger generations, I should say, and say, you know, kids nowadays have no patience. We as a whole have no patience. Speaking of comedy routines, Louis C.K. does a great bit about the guy on the airplane sitting next to him complaining about how, like, the Wi-Fi was running a little slow for a moment on an airplane, and how Louis talks about, can you consider how amazing it is that you are flying through the air and you can even watch a movie or you can use your phone while you're sitting on a metal tube or whatever in the air flying cross country? Have some patience that the internet stops working for 30 seconds and appreciate the advancements in technology that even allow you this opportunity to be upset. But nowadays, with technology and apps, everything is about convenience and doing things quickly. We don't have any patience for anything, all of us, right? We like to blame the teenagers on the phone and, oh, they don't watch baseball anymore. Baseball needs to change their game. It's everybody. We're all so impatient nowadays. You do everything through your phone. You don't want to go wait in a line, right? You order a pickup on your phone so you could just drive to the restaurant, grab the food, get back in your car. You don't want to stand the line and order, right? Even if it's like a Chipotle where it takes 30 seconds. Nope, not good enough. You got to order ahead. You want the food ready. You want to walk in there, just grab your bag of food, and you're on your way. And it's not just teenagers that do that, right? We all have lost patience. That's what technology has done. That's what apps have done. That's the whole point now. You're trying to streamline everything. Companies will sell themselves on the convenience or the ease or this or that. It's all about being quick and doing things quickly. And, you know, you oftentimes hear about, like, cancel culture. And we don't need to get into all that. But the idea is if somebody makes one mistake, right, they're done with. You'll see athletes have former tweets brought up from something they tweeted when they were 16 years old, 15 years ago. You can't make a single mistake anymore. And so it all comes back to sports and college football where it's very similar. We have no patience, and you can't have one bad year anymore. No longer can we afford you to have one down season. I mean, I guess if you're a Dabo Sweeney, you've built up enough stock, and you've won national championship, there's no way you're moving on from Dabo after a year like this, which has turned around. They could still go win 10 games. They played much better. But when they were starting off slow, I don't think anybody realistically talked about, oh, you got to move on from Dabo. Not that crazy. Just like if Nick Saban had a down year, one down year, you wouldn't want to move on from him. But there were conversations about Bill Belichick with one losing season last year, not talking about firing him, but talking about how Belichick lost it. It was all about Tom Brady. He's not that great of a coach based off of one down year. Right, we've lost patience, and we have lost the ability to give coaches the opportunity to figure some things out. Most of us in our own lives have lost that opportunity to make a mistake and to figure it out or to learn from it or to try to turn it around. You make one mistake, you're done. You're vilified. You can't come back from it. although in this society, usually you give it a little time, you can come back. Or you issue an apology. We're very forgiving. You can come back from whatever type of mistake you typically make. But for Dan Mullen in Florida, I mean, look at the job he did at Mississippi State. In a lot of cases, the most successful coach they ever had. I mean, he got them to number one in the country. All right, got to an Orange Bowl, won 10 games there. He goes to Florida. Double-digit wins each of the first 2 years. Year three, they're in an SEC title game. They lose by a touchdown to Alabama. Year four, which is this year, they gave Alabama everything they could handle earlier this year. The wheels came off. Florida has been embarrassing over the last month. The program's a little bit in disarray. You lost some recruits to Georgia in the last couple of weeks. You had to fire your defensive coordinator. The belief is that the guys kind of quit. Can Dan Mullen get him back on track? But I think he's done enough to have allowed himself, of course, the news yesterday being that he was fired, hence this conversation. But I thought that he had done enough to give himself the opportunity to have 1 year to try to fix it, to be able to learn from this mistake, this error, to try to correct his error. Right, nowadays, we don't give those opportunities. You can't learn as you go. You get hired for a new job, you're expected to be ready to hit the ground running instead of, you know, kind of figuring some things out along the way. Like maybe back in the day, you hire somebody at a new company, right? Well, they're learning as they go. You can be patient with new employees. Nowadays, you got to figure things out immediately. It's a fast-paced society with no patience and no time to allow you to learn or make up from your mistakes. Steve Sarkisian's having a down year at Texas, right? People want him out. Brian Harsin, I read things over this weekend, head coach at Auburn. They've now lost three in a row, lost to South Carolina. I saw articles written about how Gus Malzahn had the same record last year and you fired him. All right, what are you doing with Brian Harsin? You brought in this new coach. He's done just as bad as Malzahn. What are you going to do with it? It's been 1 year. Let him. He's coaching the SEC for the first time. Right, let him learn. Let's have a little patience here. And for Dan Mullen, I thought it was far too quick to pull the rug out from underneath him, right? Fire him yesterday and put an end to all this. I think coaches should be given the opportunity to learn from those mistakes or given the chance to turn things around when they've had the success that Mullen has had in the past. Florida was ranked in the top 10 his first 2 years there. Last year, they were number 12. He's had them in the top 12 his first 3 years. He has one down season. He's gone. He can't even finish the year. And I think it's a troubling trend for coaches in college football and for other coaches. You know, Florida's trying to hire a new head coach. You look at that and think, like, man, I can't afford to have one bad year. Dan Mullen's first 3 years, they were really good. Double-digit wins, SEC title, top 12 team in the country. He won two-thirds of his games in the SEC. He had one down year where he lost his quarterback, his star tight end, his number one wide receiver, and he's out before even the end of the season. I don't think that helps Florida. Now, it's a big enough brand so people will ignore it and go take that job anyways, right? But you start to build a reputation, these schools, when you fire coaches from one down season and now you have to go try to hire a new coach, they're thinking, well, if I have one down year, I'm out of there. They're not going to give me the opportunity to learn. Just like for you, if you're looking at a new job, right, and you look at that company and think like, well, I mean, they got a quick trigger. They fire people very quick, right? You're a salesman, you have one bad quarter, you're gone. Or you have one bad year, they don't give you a chance to make up for it. And you look at this other job where they're a little more patient, you're like, oh yeah, maybe I'd prefer to go there. In fact, that's the conversation around Lincoln Riley right now, right? These reports that Lincoln Riley may leave Oklahoma for LSU. Oklahoma has always been patient with their head coaches. They haven't had a ton of coaches over the years. LSU, meanwhile, Ed Orgeron just won the national championship 2 years ago. He's already fired. If I'm Lincoln Riley, I'm looking at that and thinking, man, even if I win a national championship, if I have one or two down years, I'm gone. At Oklahoma, he hasn't won anything, and he's been there closing in on already now, what, close to a decade probably? Maybe not quite, but he's been there a while, and they'll give him they'll keep him around for as long as he's succeeding there in the Big 12, soon to be in the SEC, for that job security. And I also bring this back to Mel Tucker then on the kind of the other side of things. Mel Tucker, I need to get Mel Tucker's agent. The guy had a losing record at Colorado his first year, only year as a head coach. And Michigan State wanted to hire him last year. And he originally said no. And Michigan State then upped the offer and threw him more money. And that's what got him to Michigan State. They got into a bidding war for a guy under 500 at Colorado. A one-year head coach, losing record. They got in a bidding war because they wanted him so bad. So they hire Mel Tucker last year. He has a losing record last year. Turns them around this year. And I've given a lot of props to Mel Tucker. I think he's done a really good job at Michigan State this year. But to then, according to reports, go out and offer him what would be the second largest contract in college football after half of a good season. They just got blown out by Ohio State. They could lose this week. They could very well finish up 9-3. Two losing seasons and then say a 9-3 year. That's worth being the second highest paid coach in the country? More than Dabo, who's won championships? Right? More than, I don't know, pick Lincoln Riley, who has at least has been to the playoff? More than anybody other than Nick Saban? And in that sense, it's the other side of the coin, but I think Michigan State needs a little more patience. Like, what are you doing jumping all in on this guy because he's had two good months? You want to make that sort of commitment, $95 million, make him the second highest paid coach? I think we need a little more patience, really, in all sports. You could say throughout just life and society in general, but especially when it comes to coaches in college football. Somebody like Dan Mullen should be able to have one down year and at least be given the opportunity to turn it around. And if he comes back next year and you see things aren't better or maybe they're even worse, then you can make a move. But to have three good seasons to start with at Florida and then that down year, right, is a bit of a concern. And I've said it before about Will Muschamp, and I guess it's similar for Mullen. It's like when you miss your turn. I've done a lot of traveling here over the weekend with the Citadel. When you are on one of these back roads, these back, you know, dark, windy country roads, and you miss your turn, and it's one of those streets, those roads, where you know there's not another left turn for like a few miles, or you don't know that right away, but you soon find it out, and you miss your left-hand turn. The GPS is telling you, oh, I'm supposed to take a left there. Oh, okay, I'll just take the next left and loop around. And you're driving down the road, and you're going the wrong way, but you figure there's going to be another left turn coming up. I can get back on track. But at a certain point, when you're driving down that road, you get to a certain point where you're going so far out of the way and there's no left turn, you realize this is not worth it. I should just pull a U-turn. And I was talking about that at the time with Will Muschamp, right? That you're waiting on him to turn it around, but in the meantime, you're going so far out of the way that it's now making it harder to turn around. Maybe that's the case for Dan Mullen, that Florida realized, you know what? There's not going to be another left turn coming up and we're for a while, and by that point, we're going to be so far out of the way, we might as well just pull a U-turn, which in this case would be firing your head coach and getting another coach instead of waiting for him to turn around because in the process, he's only digging a deeper hole. Maybe that is the case or would be the case with Dan in Florida. I just think for all coaches, you should be able to afford to have one down year. Different scenario, but Pete Carroll was 500 first year at USC. And he wasn't really proven at that point. Hadn't worked in the NFL, comes to USC, 500 in year one. If that happened nowadays, right, they probably want him out of USC. We knew what happened afterwards. Nick Saban at Alabama, right, 500 first year, lost to Louisiana Monroe. A little bit different because at least he had won a national championship before, so he had that to fall back on. But still, that happens today at a big-time program. I mean, it's going on right now. Sarkisian, he's under 500. He's 4-6, not 6-6. But people want him out at Texas a year into the job. All this is to say, I think we need a little more patience. And I think it would also bode well for the schools. If you dated somebody, you should probably never marry someone, and there may be people out there listening who would disagree because the scenario worked out for them. If you get into a relationship with somebody who left their current significant other for you, that should be a warning sign, right? Because then it means they'd be willing to do the same thing to you. And so my point being, when you look at a Florida and you think, man, they fired that coach after one down year, I should be concerned about going there because they'll be willing to do the same thing to me. If you marry the man or woman who left their spouse for you, don't be surprised when they then leave you for somebody else. If you go to Florida now, don't be surprised. One down year, you're only the head coach there 2-3 years. Look at Washington, Jimmy Lake. A year and a half, he's gone. Don't be surprised these schools start to build this reputation. And if you're a head coach, maybe you don't want to go there. Although with that said, all big-time jobs are kind of becoming like that, that it doesn't matter where you go, you're not going to be given a very long leash, especially if it's in the SEC. All right. Those were my – I saw the Dan Mullen firing. You knew it was probably bound to happen. I just still disagree with it. I think a coach, whether it's Dan Mullen, Shane Beamer, Dabo, anybody else, they should be given an opportunity to have one down year and be able to come back from it, at least the opportunity to try to come back from it. Just like you and your job would love the opportunity. You have a bad quarter, a bad year, you blow one sale, you make a big mistake, you put your foot in your mouth in front of a partner at the office, whatever it is, you'd like the opportunity to try to clean it up, to try to come back from it. And coaches nowadays are not given that opportunity. And I think if you're Florida, you clip this audio, throw it in my face a couple of years, I think Florida regrets the move. Dan Mullen did a really good job the last couple of years. Remember where you were before him. We'll see where they are after. But if I'm a Florida fan, you may be happy they're moving on from Mullen because of the situation this program currently is. But who's getting you really excited today that you think you're going to go higher? Right? Is Billy Napier, who I think could be a good coach, I wanted the Gamecocks to go after him. But if you're Florida, are you really excited? Like, oh, yes, now we can go get Napier. That's our guy. We're going to go win national championships. I don't know if there's that coach out there. Like, typically people always point to Bob Stoops, Urban Meyer, right? If you could hire somebody like that, then absolutely go for it. But right now, who are the big names in the market that Florida's looking at? And does it really excite you that you have to get rid of a guy who just had you in the SEC championship less than a year ago? Had you playing in the SEC title game, what, 10 months ago? And he's already gone? I don't know, long term, if it will work out for the Gators. Coming up, we spend so much time talking about the playoff in college football. The new rankings will come out tomorrow night. We'll spend more time talking about it this week. It's what we do. But in the case of this year, I guess we're kind of just wasting our breath because it's all going to work itself out. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we only spend so much time worrying about the playoff field in college football, but it seems like it's just going to take care of itself this year anyways. And we'll get to that here coming up on the show. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. We will get to our NFL breakdown, previewing all the games, or I should say breaking down all the games in the NFL from over the weekend. Coming up at the top of next hour, about 20 minutes from now. By the way, South Carolina, the women's team, they were down, 12 in the first half? They're now leading by 9 in the fourth quarter over UConn. UConn has only 3 points so far in the fourth quarter. So South Carolina potentially with a big come-from-behind victory in that one and would be a big-time win in a 1-versus-2 matchup. Both teams, of course, undefeated. Why they're playing at noon, though, I said it earlier, I don't understand. I don't know why they're playing this game at noon today. What is the biggest game in women's basketball? Probably will be, I don't know what the rest of the schedules look like. I mean, that's probably the game of the year all year in women's basketball. And it's going on a Monday at noon. So go figure. Anyways, you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phones because Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
Well, congratulations, Carolina. Bowl eligible, finally. A lot of pressure is relieved. From Carolina, because used to in the day, they would lose that kind of a game, and then they'll be down to Clemson and Carolina would disappoint me on that one sometimes. But I think this game with Clemson this year is winnable. I say Carolina would probably win by at least 2 touchdowns.
Wow, you got the Gamecocks winning by at least 2 touchdowns Saturday against Clemson.
Yes.
Wow. Now what happened?
It's winnable. It's a home game.
Well, it is winnable, yeah.
It's a rival game. And then we got a victory over Auburn this week.
Yep,
so here we come up on Clemson. They're motivated. And Shane Beamer can probably do a Clemson win this time because Clemson is vulnerable, and they can be beat and have been beat. So it's about time because it's at home now. So they got a good quarterback, and I've seen him in action and everything. So he could throw it and everything. So I think Carolina can really win this one by at least 2.
Okay. Now, I'm trying to remember. Did you pick the Gamecocks to beat Auburn?
Yeah.
I think you did, right? Yeah, okay.
I did it. I told them by 7 points, but
right,
a little
that's
less
what I thought.
Than that.
Yep.
But
hey,
a win's a win, right?
You got that right. So did you celebrate? Did you have your Oreo ice cream after they won?
Yes, sir. It was good, too. You know?
There you go.
I didn't take no prisoners. So
I can imagine.
It was good to go.
What bowl? Is there a certain bowl? What bowl would you like to see South Carolina in? You want to see him in the Idaho
I'd like to see him in the
bowl?
SEC championship
Oh,
game.
Well, yes, of course. I don't think that's a possibility this year, though.
Not this year, but maybe next year. But a bowl game, they just bowl eligible. They haven't got 7 wins. If they beat Clemson with 7 wins, what about the Sun Belt Bowl, maybe? Or the what's that other flower at Christmas time? Poinsettia Bowl?
Oh, yeah, get a nice little poinsettia
bowl. Something like that.
Yeah, there you
or
go.
Maybe worse yet, it could be a Chick-fil-A Bowl.
Oh, that's not bad.
It is to me. I'm not too thrilled with those Chick-fil-A's.
You're not a Chick-fil-A
Everybody
guy.
Else better get their eyes opened up. I like a chicken sandwich, not no chicken that you can almost read a newspaper through it.
All right, well, where do you go then to get your chicken, if not Chick-fil-A? Are you a Popeyes guy, maybe like a Church's?
No, I can't do the spice thing, but
no.
Let's say I do the Church's pretty good. They're
okay.
Real good chicken, you know.
Uh-huh. What about Zaxby's? Do you do Zaxby's?
Zaxby's would be okay. Yeah.
That's okay. All right.
But, you know, Chick-fil-A, I don't know why everybody at Chick-fil-A, I could eat about 10 of those and ask for more.
Yeah.
It wouldn't hush a puppy, you know?
No, that's what I say. I know.
I mean, people better wake up. You don't even get mayonnaise and mustard and all that. You got to add that all to it.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. Well, hey, appreciate it, Super Dave. We'll see if the Gamecocks can win
Saturday.
Talk to you
later.
Touchdown. All right. I do agree Chick-fil-A is, I've always said, I do think it's a little overrated. I enjoy it, but it was the type of thing that growing up in the Northeast, we same idea with Sonic. We didn't have Sonic for years, but they always had the commercials on TV, and then you go to Sonic for the first time, and maybe it's because you build up the expectations too high in your own head, right? But it's like, yeah, this is what everyone's been clamoring about. Similar to Chick-fil-A. First time I had Chick-fil-A, I thought, yeah, you know, it's good, but... Yeah, everyone's going crazy. You drive by, the drive-through line is out the parking lot at any Chick-fil-A. So we'll see which bowl the Gamecocks actually go to. In Super Dave's case, you hope it's not Chick-fil-A. By the way, in terms of the game against Clemson, Clemson's favored by 11.5 right now. I had asked somebody a few weeks ago what the line would be. This is probably going back at least a month maybe. And at the time, they said 11.5, and it has remained that. I think it did open at Clemson by 14, which is surprising. It's now down to 11.5. I thought it would be a little bit lower at this point, but 11.5, Clemson favored Saturday against South Carolina. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Don on James Island is with us. Don, what's going on? How are you?
Good morning, Luke. How are you doing today?
Doing well. What's up?
Well, I was just listening to Super Dave. You know, if he ever gets a chance to go to the Peach Bowl, and I don't think South Carolina is going to be going there this year, but one of the neat things they do is they throw out from the upper deck a little Chick-fil-A cows attached to parachutes. So it's always fun trying to catch one of those, and I don't think you get anything for it except the cow and the parachute, but kind of a fun thing. You were talking winners and losers earlier, Luke, and I don't know if you mentioned this guy. Well, one of the losers right now and probably for the next few weeks is going to be an agent. His name is Jimmy Sexton. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy handles the contracts for almost all of the SEC coaches and many of the other high-profile national coaches.
Right.
So clearly Jimmy is a winner because what is happening now is all his clients are being shopped for other jobs, and Jimmy is just sitting back and fielding phone calls and collecting his increased fees every time one of his clients gets a new contract. And it's if it wasn't so serious, it's kind of funny that he gets these ADs to bite every time.
Yeah, Jimmy Sexton is the most powerful agent for a reason. I've said for a while that we have given too much power. The administrators in college sports, specifically college football, have given too much power to the agent in these scenarios when it comes to especially the buyouts and these crazy contracts. And Mel Tucker, I don't know if he's represented by Jimmy Sexton or not, he's the latest example that after 2 good months, he's now reportedly going to get a $95 million contract that I'm sure is going to have a huge buyout. And these schools are being held over bent over a barrel, held over a fire, whatever you want to say, because they don't want to let these coaches go. And the coaches have all of the negotiating power when it comes to these buyouts and huge deals. And then specifically Jimmy Sexton is the one that really wins as the agent in all of this. So we've gone too far. I don't know how we could swing it back in the other direction, but we've gone too far in giving the power to the agents and the coaches in this whole scenario that you get these types of deals where now after Mel Tucker, we're getting reports that Lincoln Riley is going to get a similar contract to go coach at LSU. And I just think it is getting crazy with the buyouts and the amount of money these schools are paying these coaches. And then therefore, when they want to make a move, then have to pay them. Like Gus Malzahn got $21 million to then lose his job. I think we have swung too far in that direction because of guys like Jimmy Sexton.
Yep, you're exactly right, Luke. I just find it kind of comical watching everybody run around trying to get their next coach and bid against themselves, basically.
Right. Absolutely.
Crazy work.
Yeah, it sure is. I appreciate it, Don. Give us a call back anytime. Yeah, Jimmy Sexton, and he's going to have a great holiday season because he's going to cash in on all this. I always found it interesting that there's one guy that leads the way, right? Like Scott Boras is the guy in Major League Baseball. How do we get to the point where it's one agent in particular that dominates all these sports? In the NBA, it's LeBron. I'm drawing a blank on his guy. He's running the NBA now. It was for the longest time I can picture him in the NFL, Terrell Owens' agent, Drew Rosenhaus. Was the premier agent. You don't hear so much about him anymore, so maybe he's fallen off a little bit in the NFL. But there's always one agent in every sport that just runs the thing, and for Jimmy Sexton, it's him in college football. And absolutely, he's going to be the guy. You're going to be fighting with multiple clients of his. He's going to be the biggest winner in all this because it's like, all right, either hire this client over here or this guy over here. He represents Lane Kiffin, who may go to Miami. He represents any big-time coach that's going to get a job this offseason. And going back to what I said about patience, I think it goes hand in hand. The whole thing. Out of control with all this stuff, with these coaches and the buyouts and the contracts. Mel Tucker has 2 good months. He's gonna flounder here at the end of the year. He gets $95 million out of it, second highest paid coach for his first ever winning season. We're going too far in that direction that we have to try to swing it back. And the last point on this is that Scott Frost contracts should be based, and this will never happen, but contracts should be based off of how you perform as a coach in terms of when you do well and you want that raise. Sure, you should be able to get it. But when you do poorly, you should have to give some money back. And that's what happened with Harbaugh in Michigan. It's what happened this year with Scott Frost at Nebraska. They took pay cuts to stay on the job because they weren't winning enough. It's very hard to get most coaches to agree to that or the agents or for you to be in a position where you could get them to agree to that. But that's how these contracts should be based. You want to go win the SEC? Sure, we'll pay you millions of dollars. But when you have a down year, we're going to take some of that money back. Of course, it never happens that way. All right, before we go here in hour two, let's go back to the phones. Dave from Georgetown is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
You're coming in good, Teacher Luke.
Oh, happy to hear.
I can hear you. You sound good last week coming from the Ronald McDonald House.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I was happy to stop by and spend a few moments with Bobby, give him a little bit of a break on his 12 hours.
Yeah, you sound good. What I'm calling for is now I'm an Alabama fan. But I like what the Gamecocks is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Bimmer would always say, we're moving forward, right? So
yes.
Even though they lost some games in between, they're moving forward. And could you tell me quick if there's any, in the history of the Carolina coaches, is there any coach who went to a bowl game in the first year? I don't think they have. Holly Reef Bowl, okay?
All right,
and
we'll
go
see.
Go Alabama.
All right. Appreciate it, Dave from Georgetown. I'm surprised he hasn't become a Georgia fan yet with the way this season has gone. By the way, 24/7 Sports has
sensei.
That's right. 24/7 Sports right now has South Carolina in the Duke's Mayo Bowl against UNC. Talk about a dream for Bobby. Duke's Mayo Bowl with South Carolina playing in that. We'll see if that's the case. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Mario Midday Show on ESPN Radio.